Radio is a very special medium.
There's a magic to radio that's like nothing else.
People are making breakthroughs.
I mean, the theme, I think, is brilliant. And every year, it should be World of Sound.
Profound and moving in a way that sneaks up on you.
It's just honest, and I think that comes across.
The Radio Academy Festival 2025 official podcast, brought to you by Rayo.
Hello and welcome to a Radio Festival 2025 special for the Radio Academy podcast. I'm Adam Skin, and this is the first of a three-part takeover recapping all the things that happened at this year's festival. The theme this year was World of Sound, and for the first time, we had four stages. I know, four stages. That's including our brand new Dolby Library stage. Over the next three episodes, I'll be bringing you conversations and all the best bits from this year's Radio Festival. So if you were there and want to relive the best bits, then it's for you. If you weren't able to make it and want to relive the best bits, then it's for you as well. It's for everyone. So this week, we'll be speaking with Valerie Geller on what it means to be creating powerful radio.
If you fall in love with radio or audio media, it's like being bitten by a bug and you get a virus, only it's a really good virus.
And we'll be finding out if the audio-only podcast is dead. I mean, I really hope not, because, you know, we're kind of here right now doing our thing, and fingers crossed we get a positive answer on that one, but that'll be a bit later on in the episode. But where better to start this week than at the beginning? The first talk on the festival stage this year was by Tony Phillips and Axel Cacoutier, and it was called Black Voices Matter, and it was such a great way to kick off the day. It was one of those where the hairs start standing up on your arms almost. It was incredible. And the lovely Tom Jackson caught up with Tony and Axel just after their talk.
It's the Radio Academy Festival, and the first talk has just finished with some really poignant messages, powerful visuals as well. Tony, to start with you, can you talk us through a little bit about what the process was like putting this talk together?
Well, last year I worked for the first time with Axel. And so when I was invited very kindly to do this, I wanted to work with Axel on something that I hadn't done before. I had an idea about what we should talk about, which is about voices, black voices, the importance of listening. But I wanted to try something, just as I did last year, to do something in a way that I hadn't done before, which is to work with somebody who's got such an exceptional grasp of storytelling and the use of sound. And I know that Axel has been playing a little bit with visuals over the last few years. So it was just an opportunity to just do something different and, you know, expand and extend what I normally do.
Axel, can you talk to us a little bit about those visuals? When you were putting them together, for those who may not have been able to make it to the festival today, can you give us an idea of what we were able to witness earlier?
Sure, yeah. Reading Tony's script, getting a sense of the ambition and the goals and the overall feeling and takeaway, the approach was very similar to how I would approach sound. With it's a complementary, it's a conversation, it's a palpable presence that, with Tony's script, what he's saying will eventually make sense, will match up with what the visual is saying, the same way that the sound, the classic technique of like, okay, we're hearing a forest, we don't know why we're hearing a forest, and then Tony regales a wonderful experience, and then boom, we're in the forest, kind of thing like that. So like just really laying the groundwork to set up the listener, the viewer, to participate in the storytelling just as much as Tony is telling us the story.
And I think that worked brilliantly in the talk just now. You could hear a pin drop. It was that silent. And coming back to you, Tony, you were talking about hearing and seeing. How important is that?
I mean, it's critical. It's hard for me, and it's hard for a lot of people to forget what happened in 2020 with George Floyd, and there are countless other cases like that, tragedies like that. So I wanted to kind of remind us what George Floyd's, what happened to George Floyd is a reminder then, it's a reminder now, and it's a reminder for the future that actually, you know, the future of this industry really is, it's absolutely dependent on people listening really, really closely to each other. I can't state that any louder. It's just essential. not just for radio, but for life and for politics and for international relations, everything. It's all about listening. And that's the simple message I wanted to get across.
The theme of this year's festival is World of Sound. And what is it about audio that suits bringing diverse stories from all over the planet and all sorts of different cultures and backgrounds to life?
I mean, it's essential. And, you know, it's interesting that the platform of podcasting should be doing this, because it's made recording stories and gathering stories so much easier. The challenge is really making sure that these voices are actually being heard, that they're cutting through somehow. So, I mean, the theme, I think, is brilliant. I think it's essential. And every year it should be World of Sound.
Coming to you, Axel, how did it feel to be opening the festival?
There's two ways I can answer that. The first fun way, being an Aries myself, I very much love going first, because that's, I find myself doing that a lot anyway, so this feels very apt and synchronous. But I think overall, in the putting my audio head on, I loved the idea, because I knew what we were going to say needed to be heard in a way. And it's 10 out of 10, big up whoever curated this, whoever decided that with Tony's thing. I don't even know how much was written before this decision was made that we'd go first, but love the fact that we did. And honestly, yeah, very content, very happy.
That is interesting, because I don't think I was asked to do it. Nothing was written, and the organizers have not once said, can I have a look at your script? So I have to pay tribute to Dixie Stewart and Chris North and our producer Naomi, because we have been left to just get on with it, to create something, to work on something. And there's been an awful lot of faith that's been put in us to deliver something. And we hope that it worked. We hope that it carried through.
It was really profound and moving in a way that sneaks up on you, I think. Certainly at the start of the day as well. Wow, what a sucker punch. I love as well a thing that doesn't, you don't know what it is. Is it a presentation, spoken word? Is it a wake-up call? It was everything. I thought it was phenomenally delivered, without notes, multimedia, call to mind. It was personal, it's past, present, very much future as well. You know, you think you know these stories and you don't. You need to be told these things, you need to hear these things, and I think it was phenomenal.
And what was great again this year, as we heard from loads of you guys, loads of the delegates at the festival, about what your favourite talks were and what moments really impacted you throughout the day. And we'll be hearing a few more of those across the next three episodes of the Radio Academy podcast. Now we're going to take our first trip to the Impact stage this year. And Izzy Brand caught up with the amazing Valerie Geller in our little podcast hub that we had for the day in the Royal College of Physicians. And it was, well, I've never seen Harry Potter, but it's how I imagine Hogwarts to be. It was like this room with loads of portraits and statues and like fancy chairs you weren't allowed to sit on. Bonkers. Maybe I do need to watch Harry Potter. Anyways, Izzy had a lovely chat with Valerie, and Valerie Geller has a million and one job titles, it turns out. So who better to introduce Valerie Geller than Valerie Geller herself?
My name is Valerie Geller, and I work with broadcasters and communicators and podcasters all over the world for really just one thing, and that is to get, keep, and grow audiences. Developed a model years ago, and that was tell the truth, make it matter, never be boring. And it's just been a wonderful thing to apply it to all kinds of storytelling, whether you're a talk presenter, a disc jockey, a news journalist. It works because it's storytelling, and it's about never being boring.
That's absolutely amazing. And am I right in believing you came over to the UK just for today?
I came over for today, and then the back end of it is I'm going to spend some time with friends later in the week. But it's, you know, it's always good to combine work and play, because it's life. But I did come for this because I worked in the UK a lot 10, 15 years ago. And then, you know, COVID happened and lots of things happened in the world. And there's a whole new generation, your generation, that is out there. And it's very exciting for me having a new book out, which also has chapters on, you know, podcasting and AI and much more on storytelling,
working across, you know, multiple platforms. We really are working in screen media now. It's no longer just audio or video. We're working in everything. And it's, what do you need to tell your story? And why does it matter? How can you make a listener care? The great hallmark of a talented communicator is he or she can get you to care about something you didn't care about 1 minute ago, or listen to a song you didn't care about the artist, but the way they go into it, now you have to hear it. That's the talent. And so I can't teach talent, but I work all over the world and teach the craft.
And tell me about the book, because obviously you've got a plethora of publications, but this one, what was the writing process like in comparison to sort of previous experiences?
It was interesting. I wrote the book, and the book was really due in 2019. It's actually a British publisher. Taylor & Francis is the publisher, Routledge Press, and they're based in Oxford. And they were expecting the book in 2019, except COVID happened. And so suddenly, you could interview, you know, the Queen of England in your bathrobe from your kitchen on Zoom. And that was a game changer. And so suddenly the technology was changing. AI started to come in big, huge, you know, in a way that was going to be very powerful and a game changer. So between the technological shift and working remotely, radio and television changed and broadcasting changed. And then podcasting, which opened the doors, no barrier to entry. Anyone can be a podcaster, but it's not about being a podcaster. Anyone can be a guitar player, but how good are you? And how serious are you? And how persistent are you going to be? And how badly do you want it?
And you touched on the generational differences. At an event like this at the Radio Academy Festival, you can see sort of younger people straight through to people that have been in the industry for a while. Is it reassuring to see that?
I love it. Here's the thing. If you fall in love with radio or audio media, it's like being bitten by a bug and you get a virus, only it's a really good virus. And there's a magic to radio and a magic to audio that's like nothing else. And podcasters are discovering it now. The one-to-one connection, the instant intimacy, the fact that you can tell stories in a way that you really can't in any other medium. And the most beautiful thing about radio is that if you're alone in a room or alone in a car or just feeling isolated or alone, and then you press a button and you're not alone anymore. You know, that's the magic. That's the gift we give as broadcasters and communicators.
I absolutely agree. And just to finish on, where do you see the radio world going in 20 years? Because obviously the transformation over the last couple of years with the introduction of podcasting and all the different surrounding mediums has changed the landscape. But if I were to put you on the spot and say, in 20 years, where do you think the radio industry will be? What would you say?
I think that we are in the middle of a change, and I'm never a good predictor. Here's what I can tell you will always work. Human beings sharing their stories and experiences and the need for entertainment, information, inspiration, and connection. And also transformation. How can your life be better tomorrow than it is today because of something you're hearing? How about talkable topic? If you have kind of a life that's not terribly exciting, but you hear something and suddenly you've got food for the conversation later with your friends or your loved ones. I think that those things, there will always be people who wake up in the morning and say, what happened? So now it's just, can radio provide that or are they going to get that elsewhere? The main difference generationally that I notice is in attention span. And also it's in making telephone calls. If the phone rings, it's somebody over 40. If you get a text and they say, when can I call you or when can we meet? That's somebody under 40. So that has changed because radio used to be a very telephone-oriented business and it is no longer.
And one thing I realize I've not asked you about is your talk. So this afternoon you're doing a longer talk. You just did a short sort of 10-minute one. What can people expect to hear? And for people that are listening to this that can't make the event, what should they take away from what you're talking about?
Okay, well, the book, Beyond Powerful Radio, it's a third edition. It came out in January of 2025. All of the material that I will be talking about in the talk is in that book. And if you go to beyondpowerfulradio.com, you can find out more about it. But the bottom line is there is a model, which is focus, engage, opinion, position, storytelling. And that's a model based on tell the truth, make it matter, never be boring, asking, is it relevant? Does it matter? Do you care? How can you make a listener care? And again, what is your engaged question or comment right when you open the microphone? So there are certain things that we know make radio come alive. Speaking visually, you know, can you almost describe things like you were talking to a blind man? Because in a lot of ways, radio is a blind medium and the imagination is powerful. So don't tell me it's a beautiful sunset. Tell me it's a tangerine sky, you know, or candy floss sky. Make a picture. Use your words to make a picture. So those are just some of the things we're going to be talking about.
I can't believe Valerie came all the way here for Radio Festival. That's how amazing the radio and audio world is. Izzy, who just spoke with Valerie, and myself were at university together, and we actually referenced Valerie Geller's books so much in all of our essays that we wrote, and we had a really lovely catch-up with Valerie throughout the day about that, and she thought it was brilliant. And she also loved our little podcasting media hub that we had in this Hogwartsy room, I'm going to call it. And there was even a picture, I'm sure Valerie won't mind me saying, but there was this portrait of Henry VIII in there, and she got me to take a picture of her and Henry VIII. And I'm not going to say that was the best part of her day because she was talking radio all day, but it was probably up there. Now we're going to move on to something we all love, apart from audio and radio, obviously. It's money, and it's back to the festival stage where there was a lovely session on building sustainable revenue with audio. The amazing Ruth Cooper Dixon caught up with Paul Fernley, Business Development Director at Audio Always, Kiari Page, the freelancer in podcast marketing, Kobe Amanaka, a co-founder at Strip Media, and Emmy Geddes, the UK acquisitions lead for Patreon.
I'm going to kick off with Paul. You started off saying how much the podcast industry has changed, particularly in the last 12, 18 months, and the challenges. How does an independent not feel disheartened by that? You know, with, and you were also talking about the lack of confidence as well, so...
I think we're in a very different place than we were maybe 5+ years ago, or even less than that, where like an independent podcaster could have a breakout hit overnight and have that success. I don't think it's impossible, but I do think we're in a slightly different stage in the marketplace. We're also seeing those kind of bigger podcast players, including Audio Always, have multiple shows in a single network. I think a great idea is still a great idea. I think networks like ours at Audio Always, we're really open to working with independent shows, seeing how we can support and bring them in. And also we do a lot of cross promo with like standalone shows. There's opportunities there. It's just a lot more work, I think, if you're an independent podcaster than ever before.
Kiari, you also said something very similar around you've got to put the hard work in terms of, you know, each of your episodes, like the amount of detail and depth that you go to in preparation. You know, do you think that puts people off where they do expect that overnight success that was to, you know, 2-3 years ago?
I definitely think it does put people off. But at the same time, I think if people are really passionate about it and they really enjoy storytelling, that they will put in the hard work as well. So it's like a 50-50 chance that some people may give up on themselves. But my advice is don't give up. I know it's hard work. I know it's scary, but you can find communities that will support you and root for you.
And Kobe, you were talking about only 10% of your revenue is from advertising. I think lots of people think, oh, I've got a podcast, got to get advertisers on board. What would you say to anyone that was listening to that?
I say that's true. Again, do think about diversifying, because you can get money from live shows, you can get money from merchandise, you can get money from people, the subscription channels, for example, Patreon being the most interesting one because you have a community there, but then Apple has its own one, Spotify has its own one, the supporting cast, there are other ones there, and maybe beyond all of them, if you can supply, make the content once and spread it to different channels, you know, meet your audience where they prefer to be, and that's probably the easiest thing to do. That's the easiest leverage point I think you have.
And Emmy, finally, you talked about community, which I thought was really important, and it links into connection with listening. It's, you also talked about brand integration, bringing all of those three things together. So how does somebody be creative with that? And you gave some great examples on the panel, but for someone who sat here thinking, well, I've got a podcast, what else, how do I know what else I could branch out into? And also, how do I build that community? Have you got any tips?
Yeah, of course. So the first thing is to listen to your audience. Your audience are actually a lot louder than you think they are. They're always messaging or commenting or asking for different things, and actually listen to them, because they will guide you in a certain direction. And when you start to supercharge that fandom, they will speak up more and more and more. And that's why at Patreon, we love having our group chats. We love having polls. We love having blog posts to give the audience a voice. And then that guides your content after that.
I've got one last question. What do you think's next for podcasting in the next 12, 18 months. Who wants to have a go at answering that one?
There's clearly, and you know, a lot of people are part of this, are kind of pulled to big name talents. And I think that's exciting. You know, there are a lot of big names like Graham Norton entering the podcasting space. I think the key is how do we still find authentic, original storytelling while that's happening? And it's balancing those two things is going to be the key to the next few years of the industry.
I think for me, it's talking about how much work it does is required to make your podcast work together and gel together. I think looking at ways to use automation to be able to do get a lot more leverage out of every single person. So we can spend the time going out to sponsors, we can spend more time doing the fun stuff. If you can work out how to tie a few things together, like once you've recorded your episode, maybe that's then the bare bones of your blog episode that goes with it, and then you just have to edit it rather than having to start from scratch. Those kind of things, I think that can be really powerful and can help you do the more fun stuff, which includes speaking to your audience.
I will say from a B2B organization perspective, it's definitely AI is changing the way that B2B organizations are getting these independent podcasters into play. So very much, how do you maximize AI to your best abilities to not be shunned out by AI?
I would just say it's 360. Don't just think of podcasting as audio or even just audio and video. It is everything now. It's meetups, it's live shows, it's merchandise, it's chats, it's live streaming, it's blog posts. I mean, one of our podcasters does a blog after every single episode about how he did the research, where he got the information from, how he brought it all together. And then he puts that as a blog post alongside his podcast on Patreon. And it's just a really good way of it's kind of lifting the curtain a little bit more. And people want to be inside and they want to understand what's going on. So think 360. It's the whole package now, not just audio.
Now it's time to answer the big question of the day. Is the audio-only podcast dead? And I hope it's not, especially because, you know, we're here doing this right now and you're here listening to it, and it'd be kind of awkward if it is. But Tom Jackson caught up with the speakers that were on this panel, including Emily Rippon of BBC News Long Form Audio, Chris Whiteley from Spotify, and Connor Hewitt from Platform Media.
So let's come to Chris first. Spotify recently introducing video to your platform. I've got the big question for you. Is the audio-only podcast dead? Because I'm a little bit worried.
So for us, very much no. Audio is an integral part of our strategy and will continue to be so. For us, the big win with launching video is around choice, both for creators, for producers, on what's the best format for telling a story, and for consumers, what's the best way to listen, allowing them to switch seamlessly from audio to video and back again.
And Connor, you're involved in producing a number of visualized podcasts. Yes. What can video add to podcasting and products that would have traditionally been just through your headphones?
A lot of things, really, in terms of like visual identity, ability to commercialize is like a massive one, because, you know, a lot of what we do, we make money through our video and through our social media clips. And that, you know, allows us to make commercially viable podcasts. So I think video adds a lot. I think there is still a place for audio, but that is getting incredibly competitive because of a reduction in commissions. And just with younger people consuming video at a higher rate, I just think that pie will reduce over time and make it even more competitive.
And Emma Rippon also with us from BBC News Long Form Audio. When it comes to the journalistic work that the BBC is doing, how are you finding it, making those products, those long form audio products, stand out in an increasingly crowded market?
So we're lucky that we can pull levers in BBC News and across the BBC to try and give our audio narrative podcasts a bigger footprint and to make a noise about them, get people talking about them, because actually word of mouth is often the best way of publicising content. So we can work with teams like Panorama or TV Current Affairs or our colleagues in news to do a podcast. So we joined together to do that. And there's maybe a film attached to it. We've got huge social accounts, BBC News social account, which we can host shorter videos to help publicise. We can do online pieces. I think that the online piece we did for I'm Not a Monster series 2 was one of the most downloaded or engaged online pieces for BBC News in the whole year. And so you're reaching a massive, massive audience that way. It's very different from the visualised audience. But yeah, we can pull those levers.
But with these long form audio products, there are still things that audio always does best.
Well, I think that's the immersive storytelling, but it's not that they're better than the always on chatty podcast. They're just very, very different. But, you know, when you want to listen and be taken into a world, you'll be maybe turning to a narrative podcast where, you know, many of the subjects we do or the stories that we tell are a micro story that tells a much bigger story about what's going on in the world and helps you make sense of our lives today. And one of them we did recently, The Coming Storm, really unpicks a lot of the conspiracy theories that are floating around in America at the moment. It's as relevant when they made the series, which was about 4 years ago. It's as relevant then as it is now. And it's all the kind of themes you're seeing pulled out in the Charlie Kirk story. So, you know, it's an evergreen podcast that people are going to go back and listen to and read and rediscover or discover for the first time. So, yeah, it kind of, the content is very particular. It's very intimate. You get to know characters. You follow the investigation, the twists and turns, the successes and the frustrations, and you really feel part of the storytelling.
And coming back to you, Chris, now, do you think maybe COVID may have played a part in the rise in visualized podcasts, because we lived our lives through screens for such a long time? Does this sort of boom feel like a lingering effect or just a way of the sign of the times?
It's a good question. I think it's probably a sign of the times. I think consumers are used to having choice and are used to more and more engaging with video on their terms. So whilst we're still seeing audio only doing very well, we are seeing video growing faster. People tend to, shows tend to find an audience faster if they do have video, and people who watch the shows tend to hang around longer and consume more. So I think it's probably a shift in behaviors. I think there's definitely some age-related impact there, and younger people, you know, video is more intrinsic to their life, so they're more used to be able to consume that. So I think they are used to consuming what they want, when they want, and we need to serve them that in exactly the right way.
And finally, coming back to you, Connor, for those looking to the future, maybe a changing career, or those looking to start a career in the audio industry, how important is it to work up a video skill set alongside your audio skills to make sure you're sort of prepared for every eventuality?
Yeah, so I think that a lot of our strongest producers are from audio backgrounds, and have really strong editorial minds and a great nose for a story and talent pairings and all the kind of key things that you need to be a quality producer. What we're trying to do is make effective teams where people like exec producers with that skill set, we pair them with a producer who has a more kind of digital first, social first mindset, and creating like effective teams. At the same time, we're trying to upskill people and help future-proof themselves for the future, because essentially this is just going to continue to change. And it's one of those things where you need to keep up with all of the new advances, and we've found really good success with that. So it's just a mixture of, yeah, creating those teams and of upskilling our current producers from audio backgrounds.
Thank you, Tom, for catching up there with Emma Rippon, Chris Whiteley and Connor Hewitt. And I can happily say definitively the Audio Only podcast is still alive, but I've got bad news and good news. The bad news is that's all we've got time for this week. But the good news is there's two more weeks to come of the Radio Festival coverage on the Radio Academy podcast. So get those alarms set for the next two Wednesdays. That's the 1st of October and the 8th, if you are counting. There's some big things coming. In 2 weeks' time, Steve Taylor will be taking us on a radio tour of the world, and we'll have all of the stage hosts giving us their thoughts and reflections on this year's festival.
And the energy around the festival. I think this is probably my 9th festival or maybe 10th festival, and it's always great to be back here at the Royal College of Physicians.
It's even more important to continue to learn and continue to absorb, and being back here hosting on the main stage has just kind of reignited and made me realise how important that is.
We can all learn something from it, so yeah, and it's great fun. These events are amazing.
And next week we speak to ARIA winners for Best Factual Single, Monica Whitlock and Penny Murphy, and we go all Eurovision. We catch up with this year's UK Eurovision entry, Remember Monday, who actually, at this year's festival, performed their brand new unreleased single. Would you like to hear a clip of it? Go on then, I'll play you a little snippet. Whoa, okay, that's enough. Maybe I'll play you a little bit more next week on the Radio Academy podcast, looking at all things Radio Festival 2025. I'll see you there. This podcast episode was produced by Adam Skin with the amazing help from the brilliant Tom Jackson, Ruth Cooper-Dixon and Izzy Brand, who were running around all day and grabbing these amazing interviews. And I've got some very, very exciting news. Very exciting news, actually. Yeah, our next Foot in the Door event is at the University of Sunderland on the 15th of October. So join us on the day to find out more about breaking into the audio industry and networking with industry leaders. To book a place, just go to radioacademy.org. You'll find everything you need there.
The Radio Academy Festival 2025 official podcast. Brought to you by Rayo.